the presidential race, this time from the Democratic side.
To all who can hear my voice, I declare that I am a candidate for President of the United States.
That's former Maryland Governor and former Baltimore Mayor Martin O'Malley running on a platform of restoring the American dream.
No matter the odds, no matter how tough the fight, no matter how big the challenge, and that is the urgent calling for us today, to rebuild the American dream now in our time.
But the presidential run forcing O'Malley to defend his legacy as Baltimore mayor. O'Malley believing in strong police tactics, syndicated columnist Cal Thomas.
It's a real problem. I mean, if you say you were mayor of Baltimore and you were committed to improving things there, improving the crime rate and the rest, and it hasn't been done, I think that's a real problem for him.
Thomas appearing on Fox News. This is news on the Blaze Radio Network.
Everyone is making the switch to the Blaze to make it their source for the truth. Why not make it your source for the truth? Make TheBlaze.com your homepage for news that the other outlets won't even touch. Subscribe to The Blaze TV at TheBlaze.com/TV or on Dish Network and get access to original programming like For the Record, the show that exposes what's really going on that the government doesn't want you to know. And Real News, the daily conversation on the topics of the day that matter most. Check out the Blaze Radio Network at TheBlaze.com/radio with original shows like Buck Sexton, The Morning Blaze with Doc Thompson, Pat and Stu, and Jay Severin. Or if you need something to hold in your hands, subscribe to The Blaze Magazine. So basically, anywhere you need to go, you can take the truth with you by taking The Blaze with you. This is The Blaze. Truth lives here. So just to recap, anywhere you need to go, you can take the truth with you by taking The Blaze with you. Find out all the ways at TheBlaze.com.
No problems as protesters gather at an Arizona mosque for a free speech rally. The Blaze Radio's Brad James.
The people that did this protest, I don't know who they are, but what they're saying is, we will not submit. We will not be cowed.
Speaking on Fox and Friends, that's Pamela Geller, executive director of the American Freedom Defense Initiative. Another Draw Muhammad cartoon contest in Phoenix going on without incident as cops were geared up and prepared. Organizers say the rally was held in response to the May 3rd attack in Garland, Texas, where two terrorists who worshipped at the mosque opened fire at an exhibit featuring depictions of the Prophet Muhammad.
I'm here because I'm not tolerant of the intolerant. I've read parts of the Quran. Speaks of killing Jews. I am a Jew, and I'm going to stand up for what I am.
William Leibowitz joining the demonstration in front of the Islamic Community Center of Phoenix to protest. Brad James, The Blaze News.
New information about the indictment of a former House Speaker. The Blaze Radio's Tom Peace.
Former House Speaker Republican Dennis Hastert of Illinois reportedly pays millions to cover up past sexual misconduct. The Los Angeles Times reports that unnamed law enforcement sources say the federal charges in Chicago date back to before Hastert serves in Congress. The payments being described as an attempt to conceal Hastert's sexual abuse of a male during his time as a high school wrestling coach. Tom Peace, The Blaze News.
The Dallas-Fort Worth area seeing another round of heavy rain. Rivers in the area all swelling in the last week as the record rainfall continues. More than 24 people killed in storms that start hitting Texas and Oklahoma over Memorial Day weekend. More than 20 of the deaths in Texas alone, 11 people still missing. President Obama giving Texas disaster funds to help with the state's severe flooding. The president signing that disaster declaration, providing federal funds to help Texas rebuild. Beatle Paul McCartney telling the Daily Mirror he's given up marijuana now that he's a 72-year-old grandpa. McCartney saying he's trying to set an example for the kids. I'm Kay Long with news on the Blaze Radio Network. Truth lives here.
Live from Power Talk 1210 Studios, presenting Solomon on Black with Doug Martin and Pastor Craig.
Good morning, everybody. I hope your AC or cooler's working because the ice on the Rito River is expected to finally melt today. That's what happens here in Tucson when it finally warms up enough to hit 100 degrees, and that's the forecast. So hopefully you're staying out of the heat. Listen to us here, Solomon on Blast on Power Talk 1210. We really have it pretty easy nowadays when it comes to living in Tucson when you think about it. Can you imagine having lived in Tucson back in the day before the existence of air conditioning? I know there are probably some people that don't have or can't afford AC, but swamp coolers work just as well this time of year. And given the fact you can go to any of the malls and hang out there in free AC all day, even those that can't afford it can stay cool. Maybe that's why you don't hear the social justice and equality crowd complaining about the poor not having equal access to AC, because they do have it. Or maybe they have and I just haven't heard about it. If the malls weren't available, though, would those that have AC be responsible to make sure that those that don't have AC have it? That seems pretty ridiculous, doesn't it? So why isn't it just as ridiculous when it comes to the poor in general? Have you ever wondered who is responsible for the poor? Are the poor responsible for themselves, or are the rich responsible for the poor? What do you think? Is it something you ever think about? I think it really depends on your definition of responsible, because if you think about those two questions, there's really two interpretations of both of them. Most of you, when you heard the question, probably heard the interpretation that implies who is responsible to help the poor. But the question can also be interpreted as who caused the poor person to be poor? Did the poor person cause himself to be poor, or is it because the rich man caused it? Our culture today says that both interpretations are true. Not only is the rich person responsible for intentionally making that poor person poor, but he's also responsible for making sure that poor person isn't poor. And as crazy as our culture is, the rich is responsible to the point that he's to fix the problem by paying his fair share of the taxes the government will then distribute to the poor. My point is that the culture today blames the rich person for the poor person being poor and then says they're also responsible to solve the problem. Just doesn't make sense. Why would someone cause a problem just so they could fix it? No sane person does that, unless maybe you're a bureaucrat in the government or a politician. In reality, though, I don't think there are that many truly poor people in this country. If there were, then there wouldn't be so many tattoo parlors in business. So who really is responsible? Well, I think Solomon's wisdom provides us with the answer. Proverbs 22:2 says, "The rich and the poor have this in common. The Lord is the maker of them all." Now, does that fit into your theology that the Lord is the one who makes the rich and the poor? Maybe your interpretation is that it's really saying that God's the creator of all life. Well, I'd agree. That's a valid interpretation. But I think the interpretation that God literally makes people rich and he makes people poor is just as valid. Isn't God in control of everything? Maybe you don't agree with me. And like I said, it doesn't fit into your theology. That's fine, because it's God's word, not mine. You can take it up with him. Just remember, as the wisdom of Solomon so clearly states in Proverbs 21:30, there is no wisdom or understanding or counsel against the Lord. And maybe all this is poor versus rich is, and who really is responsible, is why the war on poverty after 50 years has been a total failure. In 1964, when what was then the Economic Opportunity Act was implemented, poverty rate was about 17% in the U.S. It went down to 11% by 1973, so about 6% in 9 years. The thing is, though, the poverty level had fallen from 22% in 1959 without any government help at all. So the reality is that all the social programs in the world aren't going to change the fact that there are rich people and there are poor people, especially when, as Solomon says, it's the Lord is the maker of them all. But without the wisdom of Solomon, the foolish keep trying, unfortunately. We'll be right back with more Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. Stay cool.
Yeah. Want to keep tabs on your favorite Power Talk hosts and Fox Sports Radio? Start at the website, powertalk1210.com. There you can stream the shows, listen to past interviews on SoundCloud, see our latest tweets, and generally get sick and tired of us all. It's the perfect way to stay close with your Power Talk family. Power Talk 1210. Check it out.
Does it seem like your car is driving you around in circles? It probably is if you've been driving Tucson city streets and your car is out of alignment. If it is, then it's costing you money. Your tires wear out faster and you're spending more on gas. So what should you do? If you're wise, you call Mike Vance at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Mike's been in business in Tucson for over 25 years and has the experience to diagnose and fix that alignment problem right the first time. As the name says, though, he doesn't just do alignments. If you've got brake or suspension problems, or for that matter, just about any car problem, Mike has the expertise to fix it. As a longtime customer of Mike's, I assure you, he'll treat you with integrity and get you back on the road without running you around in circles. So give Mike a call at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276, and tell him Doug from Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 sent you. It's the wisest thing you can do for all your car repair needs. Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276.
If you or someone you know is addicted to drugs or alcohol, this could be the most important message of your life. Write down this number or store it in your cell phone, but call 1-800-509-9233. That's 1-800-509-9233. By calling the Treatment Helpline for drug and alcohol addiction, you can turn your life around. This call is completely confidential, and if you have private insurance, there should be no cost to you. Our advisors will match you with a proven 5-star luxury treatment center that will end your drug or alcohol addiction once and for all. Your future can still be bright. Let us help you break your addiction to drug or alcohol before it's too late. This call is completely confidential, and if you have private insurance, there should be no cost to you. Take 5 minutes of your time and call right now. It may change your life for the better. Call 1-800-509-9233. That's 1-800-509-9233. 1-800-509-9233.
Why not give us a call now and join in the discussion? 750-7456. We want to hear what you have to say.
Hello?
Power Talk 1210.
Okay, we're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. YouTube calls that song the most famous soccer song ever. Now, I'm sure you've heard of that, right, Oscar? Best soccer song ever? Yeah, okay. Have you heard of it? No. That's my point about this next story. What does Solomon say? He says, if you see the oppression of the poor and the violent perversion of justice and righteousness in a province, do not marvel at the matter, for high official watches over high official, and higher officials are over them. Well, that seems to be the case with the whole FIFA controversy that's going on out there. Does it really matter to us here in the United States, just like that song? Does it matter to us that that's the best soccer song ever? Has anybody ever heard it in the U.S.?
I think that's fair, Doug. We know that this FIFA story is huge on a world scale, in that FIFA is larger than the National Football League, than Major League Baseball, than the National Basketball Association, all the big sports in America.
And we know soccer is the world's largest sport.
It's the world's largest sport. But what does it mean to us?
In America, falls into the category of that song.
And in particular, what does it mean to our Department of Justice? What does it mean to law and order in the United States of America? That's, I think, the question. Not that it's important to the world, but this story of all these corrupt officials apparently receiving bribes in order to promote the FIFA agenda around the world. In particular, I guess it has to do with these small countries that they expanded into a lot of these smaller countries. In order to do that, they received bribes.
Well, maybe it's because if we're really moving towards a one-world government, we've got to have a one-world Department of Justice. And because these small countries don't have a real Department of Justice to protect them from the rich guy, abusing the poor guy. Maybe that's the whole point of this, is our Justice Department will be the police of the world for all these poor countries. Well,
and let's analyze how much advantage they're actually taking. Now, I'm not justifying the crooks. You know, one of the songs we considered using was the Autumn Wind is a Raider song because of all the pirates and thieves associated with those lyrics.
But and the team.
Yeah, no commentary on the Raiders themselves. But the idea here is that these countries are being taken advantage of by these crooks in wealthier nations. And there's a whole narrative here that I think needs to be challenged a little bit. Because, number one, we know how bribes work. Unfortunately, bribes are part of the third world economy.
Yeah,
it is fundamentally third world economics. That's how
I went down to Mexico back in the late 70s, early in the 80s. You got through there with a little bit of cash, and it took a lot less time that way. Nobody seemed to have a problem with
it. Other than that, you take a little trip down to the police station, so, you know, $20 bill could go a long way. At least, I don't know about it anymore. But right. here's, and I'm getting beyond, I'm not justifying these guys. No. I'm simply saying that these countries, like Ghana, for example, getting involved in, I think they're one of the nations named, what they have done is however they had to spend that money. The fact is they spent money to bring a FIFA event to Accra, inadvertently, however it happened, brought an opportunity to that city that they never would have had any other way. You say, well, there should be a system where they could get it legally. Yeah, that'd be nice. But the truth is, on their side of the ball, at least they did something to promote the welfare of their own country.
Probably more so than the international funds that come from the United States that go into the corrupt, high-level officials in those countries, that you can't really see the difference.
And,
right?
And when you consider, the fact exactly what you're saying is that how the foreign aid is often abused anyway,
right?
Where they're basically sending their children and other ministers and government's children out of the country to be educated, draining the great brain drain that many of these African countries have to deal with all the time. To actually put money, even if it's an illegal bribe, in the hand of a person that can actually promote the economy and the welfare of your city, I can't see how terrible that is. In other words, I know it shouldn't be done like that, but the fact that they're doing something for their own nation is a pretty amazing story in its own right.
And it's visible. Yeah. There's roads that get improved. They get some publicity in the country. And these kids that probably have played soccer all their lives actually have the opportunity to be successful because of this.
We both have a good mutual friend who lived in Libreville, Gabon. He was there during the 2012 African Cup of Nations. And he just described to me how, because of this event coming into Libreville, how they took that as an opportunity to do a spring cleaning, so to speak, to beautify the country, to expand the roads, to put in bridges, to build the infrastructure, to add stadiums and different things to just like they do for the Olympics. When I had the opportunity to see London the following year after the Olympics in London. I had never seen it so beautiful. I had been there a few times before that. It was beautiful.
Uh-huh.
Because they were able to, they took that as an opportunity to get some things done in the country. And so he said, because of that event, I don't know whether that one was one of the events that was included in the corruption charges, but because of that, they beautified Libreville, Gabon, made it a nicer looking city. And at the end of the day, if it's for the benefit of the people and of the country, there might be crooks out there that need their comeuppance. But to paint this picture like it's nothing but rich people exploiting poor people is not the whole.
Right.
The fact is, their own government's exploiting the people.
Right.
Most of the time.
Most of the time, using foreign aid from our country.
Right.
So the question is why now? Why did it suddenly come out at this point in time? Because the indications are that this has been going on for 25 years. So how significant was it in terms of the need to go prosecute this, and you're telling me that nobody knew about this for 25 years and it's all been hidden quietly away, and suddenly it's a revelation.
Well, it goes back to what you said, I think, when we first brought up the story. And I think this is a gesture on our part, on the position of our current administration, to say that we are internationally aware, we are international partners in justice, and that now the world issues are going to become more prominent to our American justice system.
Well, does it have anything to do with the fact that we have a new head of the Department of Justice in any way?
No, I understand this is one of the cases that she'd been working on before she got that opportunity.
Oh, so now this is what she's basically using to make the name for herself and be able to leave a legacy. She took down those corrupt
My question
people.
Is, why does the DOJ have such a hard time committing resources to our domestic scandals, Doug?
Well,
why do we have
question.
To go sniffing for international scandals?
In the area of soccer, too.
I think there was an IRS one I read about a little bit in the back pages of the New York Times with Lois Lerner.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
And then one of our own ambassadors. I mean, this is a huge story. You know, J. Christopher Stevens, the one that was murdered on 9/11 in Benghazi almost 3 years ago. You would think, just because of who he was and the position he held, that we would commit every resource available to getting to the bottom of that.
Too busy chasing down those corrupt soccer guys.
I guess that's another. Maybe I'm just an American sports fan and I have a hard time. Maybe I'm just prejudiced. But I'll tell you, sometimes I try to like soccer, and then I'll YouTube like soccer fights. I don't know if you've ever seen that.
No, I haven't.
Where they show the guys in the stadium are actually have better fights. But I'm talking about the ones on the pitch.
The actual players on the field.
Yeah. Once I saw that, and I saw the way that they kind of like cat fought like girls, I said, man, I don't know if I could become a fan of this.
They didn't grow up in the hood like the NBA players that really know how to fight. You're saying?
Yeah, at least guys in America, they square up, you know, whether they get pulled off of each other or not. They have a little bit of technique. Maybe that's the difference.
You know, it's kind of ironic, but I think... Vladimir Putin is also kind of on this side of it, of what we're talking about. He says, there's an article that said he came out swinging in defense of the president and against the U.S., who've gone after the soccer governing body. It says the Kremlin posted his comments on Thursday and basically saying that we're just sticking our nose where it doesn't belong. And it was, to some extent, an attempt to get... the president of FIFA out of there. So,
yeah, who knows what level of intrigue we're working, our angle, you know, what we're working from here, and as if we even care. And that, I think this is one of the reasons why it's working, because they know we really don't care and we really won't pay much attention to it. And it'll just be one of those stories that comes and goes, and they'll be able to use it as a vehicle to accomplish whatever agenda they want to accomplish.
You know, and part of this is, it may be, is that Russia's slated to host the 2018 FIFA World Cup. So maybe we're...
Well, absolutely. It could be a backdoor slap.
Yeah, trying to get around and eliminate Russia from being able to host this.
Yep. And we're trying to kind of besmirch their opportunity before it happens.
And put a little bit of pressure on Russia to maybe stop messing around in the Ukraine. But like you said, the fact that we spend, who knows how much money she spent in her investigation, and the fact that it's been going on for 25 years, are we really, really spending our dollars the right place? And are the poor really being... treated badly by the rich in this situation? I mean, are they the real victims here?
Can you imagine James Bond taking on this kind of international crisis?
Yeah, I can just see Q. All right,
allowing himself to be pushed out of an airplane, you know, to go bust some guy for a bribe in Zurich. I don't think so. I think the fact is, this story I think it's definitely a diversion at best, and it's international intrigue at worst.
Yeah, and I'm not even sure if you could say international intrigue. It sounds like more like a little bit of a Playboy fun club kind of thing for the officials more than anything else. And they've been doing, like I said, they've been doing it for 25 years. It's probably pretty much known across the board.
Yeah, but again, my real problem with it is don't we have any scandals in America that could use a little attention? Oh, I'm sorry. They did get Denny Hastert.
Oh, yeah.
They got him, so, okay.
But when you look at all the other things that are going on, like you said, Lois Lerner, the IRS, you've got the gun running going down into Mexico. You've got Operation Choke Point, that where Department of Justice is trying to shut down, like I said before, these companies that are associated with any kind of firearm sales or anything. Department of Justice focusing on something like this.
We've got Hillary's emails, which is very important because it has to do with the accountability of our public servants.
Yeah, at some
and
point.
And their responsibility to the Constitution. I think the DOJ is there for that reason.
Yeah, we'll have to cover that story at some point. I just haven't gotten a chance to read through all 55,000 emails. And and I heard...
They're just about Chelsea's wedding, by the way. There's nothing there.
Wait a minute. I thought there was also ones about yoga. But I also heard that they weren't going to be completely released until January 2016. So we're going to have to wait about 6 months.
You mean you're going to have to wait till Hillary gets sworn in to be able to read this stuff?
Well, it's 2016, so it'll be
17.
Yeah, it'll be the start of things, and we'll have to devote a show to reading Hillary's emails and see if there really is anything of any significance in there.
But in the meantime, at least they've busted a couple of guys eating Cordon Bleu in Paris.
Right. They've chased down the real criminals in this world. So I don't know what everybody else thinks, but that's kind of the approach. Is this is all, I guess it would be much to do about nothing. And as Solomon so aptly said, you know, when you see the quote, oppression of the poor and perversion of justice, don't marvel at the matter. It's high officials over high officials and high officials over them. So we'll take a break and we'll be back with more Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210.
Keep your hands off my stack. New car, caviar, four-star daydream. Think I'll buy me a football team. Absolute rubbish, laddies. Get on with your...
Power Talk 1210, the hottest new talk station in town.
Okay, so we're the only new talk station in town.
But still the hottest.
Oh, yeah.
Power Talk 1210, the power to think for yourself. What better way to reach passionate, involved listeners than to advertise in exciting NFL and NBA games? Access all that built-in sports fan loyalty and call our...
Arizona News Radio. A Yavapai County Sheriff's deputy was injured during a shootout following a traffic stop at 4 this morning in Cottonwood. The suspect is dead. The deputy's wounds are non-life-threatening. Things were generally peaceful following a freedom of speech rally that ended outside of a Phoenix mosque last night, a mosque attended by two gunmen who shot up a Draw Muhammad event in Dallas recently. William Leibowitz was at the protest last night.
We believe in freedom, and they don't. They actually don't like freedom.
Triple-digit heat has arrived in the deserts, meteorologist Austin Jameson.
Suddenly, summer is here. the triple-digit high temperatures are going to be well in place.
A panel of state judicial conduct officials are recommending that Flagstaff Justice of the Peace Howard Grodman be censured or removed from the bench for using government funds to get reelected. Geico weather, sunny, 106 in Phoenix, 77 in Flagstaff. Mike Salceda, Arizona News Radio.
Geico presents 15 things to see and do in Arizona. Situated 90 miles southeast of Tucson, Bisbee began as an Old West mining camp and grew to become one of the most cultured cities in the Old Southwest. Today, Bisbee has evolved into an artist colony and retirement community with unmatched Old West charm. That's one of 15 things to see and do in Arizona, brought to you by Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Call 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com.
Your home after a long day, preparing dinner, when...
Ew! What's that? It smells like rotten eggs.
That might be a natural gas leak.
It can't be. We don't have any natural gas appliances.
Even if you don't use natural gas, that rotten egg odor could be a sign of a leak in your neighborhood. Because gas lines can be buried anywhere.
Shut up.
No, speak up. If you ever suspect a leak, leave immediately and call 911 and Southwest Gas.
Thanks, Deep Voice Narrator.
You're very welcome.
Why not give us a call now and join in the discussion? 750-7456. We want to hear what you have to say.
Hello?
Power Talk 1210.
We don't need no education. We don't need no thought control. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
All right, we're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210. We don't need no education. Well, according to Proverbs 4:13, Solomon says, take firm hold of instruction. Do not let go. Keep her, for she is your life. Well, Buffalo is considering public boarding schools to solve their education issues. Now, I'm not sure. I would say that probably isn't what Solomon's talking about when he says take firm hold of instruction and do not let go. In this particular story, Buffalo's chronically struggling school system is considering an idea that is actually gaining momentum in other cities also, and that is public boarding schools that put round-the-clock attention on students and away from such daunting problems as poverty, troubled homes, and truancy. Supporters say such a dramatic step is necessary to get some students into an atmosphere that promotes learning, and it's worth the cost, estimated at $20,000 to $25,000 per student per year. And the Buffalo School Board member, Carl Palladino, says, we have teachers and unions leaders telling us the problem is with the homes. These kids are in dysfunctional homes. He envisions a charter boarding school in Buffalo where students as young as first or second grade would be assured proper meals, uniforms, after-school tutoring, and activities. It's one of a pair of boarding school proposals that have been floated in the city where only 53% of the students graduate in 4 years. So is this the right kind of education system that we should be looking at for the poor kids in cities like this?
Well, I think that the concept of having your child get away and get a great education is obviously an effective one over the, probably you're looking at another 100, 250, 200 years where this has been done effectively. But there's other factors besides the government. You know, let's face it, all private education before it was private, before it was public, was religious.
Right.
And all the great religious, all the great foundations of education in Western culture are religious, going back to Europe and then into the United States.
Harvard,
the Princeton. Ivy League, all of these had a religious basis to them, which allowed, gave them a moral platform in which to instruct and, you know, format, even on a much smaller scale, where you had parochial schools. Still, they were broken down, schools run by convents and whatnot. But all of that was based on some principles and some mores and some absolutes that they were able to use as the real platform to educate these children. Did it always work well? Were there abuses? Absolutely. I mean, you hear about that all the time.
Right.
But that was their basis for approaching the whole concept. But what we have here is a government with a much different value system asking the question, can we accomplish the very same thing in terms of education? I think it's an interesting idea because these kids do have so many problems at home. They do have so many disadvantages. Right. And to have somebody care about them and help them would be an amazing thing. The only question is, can the government do the job? And that's what I really wonder about.
Well, yeah, I think that when you look at it from the aspect that what is their moral basis in these public schools that they're going to bring these kids into, is it going to achieve the kind of education system that the private schools did when they had a moral basis? If you've read Booker T. Washington's Up From Slavery, his autobiography, that's where he got his education, at a boarding school. But it was a private boarding school run actually by a union officer that felt the need to, after the Civil War, to come down and help educate the slaves, the people that had been slaves in the South. And so he went out fundraising, got funds to start this school, and Booker T. Washington attended that school and eventually became the head of the university there in
Tuskegee.
Thank you. And that was along the same lines. It was all private education through private funds, and it worked. Absolutely.
And through private inspiration.
Absolutely.
And these people had the ability to devote themselves to it as their cause, and it was their vocation, but it was also their avocation. It was their heart. It was their faith. Everything they were was invested into that. So what we're talking about here is the government itself being able to accomplish the very same thing. And so that, again, is the question. Remember the whole voucher debate a few years ago?
Yeah.
I think you wouldn't even have to think about government boarding schools if you allowed government funds to be used so poor people could choose what schools they want to go to. And I think that would have actually encouraged the whole side of the education market and had people develop programs that were the most effective programs so they could, you know, get those voucher dollars. I mean, that's the way America works. It's the open market makes our country more competitive, and that competitiveness leads to innovation and creativity and effectiveness. And so,
but most people will, not most people, but some of the people out there will say that, well, what you're doing is you're just really taking the opportunity away from the poor person that can't go to those charter schools for whatever reason, and you're giving it to the rich kids so that they can get out of the public school system completely and do whatever and not have to be part of that.
But I mean, the
degenerate system.
Yeah, exactly. Well, if you let poor kids use vouchers, and they did test this in certain areas of the country, I mean, to me, this would solve a lot of the problems that they're trying to address here. But when I think, again, let's talk about the government being able to accomplish this. There are two models I think we can look at very quickly. The older model is the Indian school. Mm-hmm. This is exactly what they did with the
American Indians.
The natives on the reservations. Mm-hmm. You can drive through a lot of cities where there are cities in certain states that have reservations, and you'll almost always see an Indian school road of some sort. If Phoenix has one.
Oh, right. Yep.
In these other places, because that was very common. They actually took kids off the reservation and put them in these schools and forced them to become more mainstream American, however you want to describe that. There's mixed reviews. I'm sure some kids got a good education out of it, but there are others that are, you know, in the long run, you can see it really didn't work because...
the situation on the reservation is still, other than the fact that the casinos came in and have generated a lot of money, there still hasn't been a significant improvement in that environment.
Yeah, it didn't work the way they thought it would.
Right.
They thought they'd go back and help and
teach
build up, and but it didn't exactly work out that way. In fact, it built lots of resentment. And there's even songs have been written about what the indignity of having your child taken away from you and taken into a... So it didn't work out that way. Now, there have been religious schools that probably have been a little more effective on the reservations based on their relationships with the people and whatnot. The second one is Job Corps. Uh-huh. It's just the government high school.
Well, that was part of that whole war on poverty from Johnson back in 64. That's where the Job Corps came out of, right?
Yeah, and I've known a few kids to go through that process, and it, to a person, they will tell you, you're basically at a place, and maybe it works in this way, you're just on this side of jail, and maybe it helps you make up your mind that you don't want to go to the big jail, but it, in terms of its effectiveness and what they accomplish and what's really going on there and its impact, it's far from that effective boarding school concept, that high concept that these guys are imagining. So I don't know. I don't think the government is capable of accomplishing what they want to accomplish. I think it's a high ideal, and I can certainly understand why that they would think about this, but I don't think the government is capable of doing it, Doug.
Well, they may not be capable of educating the kids in the sense of giving them freedom and liberty to go out and, in a capitalist environment, create new ideas, use their human creativity. But maybe what they're really looking is similar to what the Germans did, in terms of indoctrinating the minds of the young kids, and maybe that's what they're really after, and that's what they'll be able to accomplish.
Yeah, so, wait, see, bingo, there you go. That's the real...
Maybe that's the real agenda.
The real agenda, if it's an agenda or if it just defaults to that because they can't accomplish anything else, right, they're going to have to, you know, major on all the little indoctrination issues that are now plaguing the public schools, and that's probably what's going to end up happening, is you're just going to have foot soldiers for the cause,
right,
you know?
Everybody's out there making sure you don't throw that plastic bottle in the trash can, and instead you recycle it.
And that's going to be basically where it defaults to, because another thing is, there is a connection between education and family. I mean, he says that's one of the reasons why he wants to do this, but without some kind of basis and support coming from your family, it's very difficult, unless you find another means of support to get that level of encouragement and motivation.
Right.
I mean, you can find it. It's out there. But it's usually based on a very personal relationship with somebody in your life that inspires you, that looks after you, that cares about you. But I don't know if Plato's Republic will work here.
No, absolutely not.
And which is, this is a version of that, I think.
Yeah.
Just having the village look after the child.
Right.
You know?
It takes a village, right? That's what Hillary says.
Yay. There you go.
Maybe this is part of her plan. All right. We'll come back with more of Solomon on Blast right after this break.
Friends, you found the only station around that respects you enough not to try to tell you how to think. We figure you are already smart enough to choose this station to listen to, so you're certainly able to form your own opinions about everything else in life. We're Power Talk 1210, the power to think for yourself.
Does it seem like your car is driving you around in circles? It probably is if you've been driving Tucson city streets and your car is out of alignment. If it is, then it's costing you money. Your tires wear out faster and you're spending more on gas. So what should you do? If you're wise, you call Mike Vance at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Mike's been in business in Tucson for over 25 years and has the experience to diagnose and fix that alignment problem right the first time. As the name says, though, he doesn't just do alignments. If you've got brake or suspension problems, or for that matter, just about any car problem, Mike has the expertise to fix it. As a longtime customer of Mike's, I assure you, he'll treat you with integrity and get you back on the road without running you around in circles. So give Mike a call at Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276, and tell him Doug from Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 sent you. It's the wisest thing you can do for all your car repair needs. Alignment Brake and Suspension, 722-2276. Okay, we're back with more of the village people. Maybe it doesn't take a village to raise the kid, but maybe it takes the village people.
That's right. They were certainly spelling that pretty well.
Right. They teach you how to spell. They give you some exercise. So it takes the village people to raise a kid nowadays. Hillary was close, just not quite close enough. All right. And the Solomon says in Ecclesiastes 4:13, he says, it's better a poor and wise youth than an old and foolish king who will be admonished no more. Well, maybe it's the rich kids in this particular instance that are the ones that are smarter, or are they? Found this article, and it says, the rich kids use the internet to get ahead, and poor kids use it mindlessly. It says that knowledge is cheap. A few taps on your smartphone or app or your laptop, you can get into the works of Plato and Einstein, watch a lecture at Harvard or Princeton, or look up a recipe for cauliflower pizza crust without spending a penny. Yet, for all these wonders, for all the wealth generated in the name of making information free, the internet has done little to improve the prospects of poor kids growing up in America. This is according to Robert Putman in his new book, Our Kids, the American Dream in Crisis. He says social and mobile technologies do almost nothing to improve social mobility. It's not leveled the playing field at all in terms of the difference between rich kids and poor kids. So is that really the case here?
Well, I don't think it's a rich kid, poor kid thing. I think it's a great title, and it kind of plays into the whole class warfare idea. But, you know, you think about it, Doug, the assumption here is that the kids with money are out there. Really, he's giving them way too much credit, I think.
Basically, because they're rich, we think they're smart.
We think they're smart. We think they're industrious. But I don't think real life plays that out at all. I think there's probably a lot of rich kids out there that they have sports cars and they just basically have a better party budget than a poor kid does.
Right. They can fly to Amsterdam to get their quality
they
marijuana.
They can look good. They're always in good schools because of, you know, their obviously other advantages. But to say that their trajectory is into somewhere really good just because they use the internet better, I think is quite an assumption. And I just think that this author's using a class warfare angle to try to make his point, but I don't think it's true at all. It's the same old thing that rich people have all the advantages, the 1%, and everybody else is basically sucks to be you, you know?
Right. And the poor are going to stay poor because they don't have all the advantages.
Because they don't have all the advantages, but I don't think that comes out in real life at all. I think one of the greatest books I've ever read, and I tell everybody about this, I could probably spend time reading this over and over again, is Wealth and Poverty by George Gilder. He takes these things to task, and he does it very, very, you know, deliberately and scientifically, but it's not an easy read by any means. But one of the things he points out, he tells the early story of Bill Gates. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, Bill Gates comes from what I would call the hungry middle class. People, they value education, obviously, but they're not rich.
No, his parents weren't in the very high, wealthy. They were maybe middle class somewhat.
Yeah, upper middle class. I mean, they're there, but they're still hungry. They're not people of extreme privilege at all.
Right.
And he contrasts Bill Gates with IBM and Texas Instruments. All the R&D for computer technology, probably the lion's share of it came from those two corporations, mm-hmm. the best and the brightest. I mean, working 24/7 in laboratories for decades on computer technology. And why was it Bill Gates that actually caused the computer technology to become mainstream? And he goes into that whole story. It's because there's something about that hunger in the middle class that makes all the difference in the world. And you get these super rich corporations. They have political issues to think about. They're sitting on certain technologies.
Bureaucracies.
Do we want to move this product here just now? We control this. Here's our bottom line. And so they're thinking about all these other things. And then you get somebody in there who's just thinking about making it and doing it right and doing it well. And all of a sudden, that person gets the inside track and passes these other people up. So it's not the rich kid that's doing this. And that's what I think. They're giving way too much credit to the rich kid here.
Yeah, we think that these big corporations have all the resources in the world to be able to create things. But really, the ultimate resource is human creativity.
Right.
And that's contained within one person.
Yeah, it's not your money that gives you that.
Creativity.
Industriousness. And, you know, I think a lot of it here, again, getting back to the class warfare thing, that we have a love-hate relationship with the rich, and if you're not rich. And that is, when you're not hating on them, we tend to ascribe to rich people superhuman qualities.
Yes.
You know, that they really don't possess.
Right. They're...
And so, you know, that's all that 99% out there, you know, they're ascribing these people with these superhuman qualities that they don't really have, you know.
Especially when they don't have the wisdom that comes from God. And a lot of times you see these rich kids, they don't have that. They haven't got an ounce of wisdom. So, I mean, Solomon was rich, obviously, one of the richest men to have ever lived. But he had God's wisdom to go along with
it. And even at that, it had to rein him back in from a far place, you know, at the end of his life. You know, there's that line from the old Fiddler on a Roof, you know, if I were a rich man, you know, maybe you have to be of a certain age to remember that. But I love that one line in the song. He talks about if he were rich, you know, people would come to him mm-hmm. for advice. And he says, and his response was, and it wouldn't make one bit of difference if I were right or wrong, because when you're rich, they think you really know.
Yeah.
That's kind of how it goes. And so, you know, you put rich in a, you put the word rich in a headline, and like, see, yeah, it's rich versus poor, these poor guys. And so they're playing EA Sports, and, you know.
That's their
they become,
idol.
Yeah, exactly. They're LeBron James on steroids. You make your own you know. Competitor there, but you know the truth is probably most people are wasting their time on the internet, and there's just a handful of people out there with this sense to say I'm going to use this to my advantage. You know,
right? YouTube is obvious case in point that a lot of people are wasting a lot of time out there on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, we'll come back with the last segment, One Greater Than Solomon, here on Solomon on Blast, right after these messages. We'll be right back. You can rely on the old man's money. You can rely on the old man's money. It's a bitch, girl, but it's gone too far, cause you know it don't matter anyway. Say money, money won't get you too far, get you too far.
Get an honest take on the day's news on Power Talk 1210, KEVT AM 1210, Sarita, Tucson. The power to think for yourself.
Ow! What's wrong, Mom?
I just got hit in the eye by one of those sign twirler guys.
Speaking of eye catching,
AdVision Outdoor. Eye-level outdoor advertising with market-wide coverage. Reach a moving target. The streets of Tucson are full of potential customers 24/7. Stretch your ad dollars with AdVision Outdoor and capture their attention with an ad display or ad bench. AdVision Outdoor provides you with the very best outdoor branding choice in Tucson. Eye-level, eye-catching, right before your eyes. AdVision Outdoor, 292-6200.
Hey there, fellow foodies. Matt Russell here from On the Menu Live, inviting you to join me this Saturday at 4 p.m. for my live broadcast from Jonathan's Cork at 6320 East Tancredi Road. Patio Pig is almost here, Jonathan's month-long celebration of the swine, and we'll have a complete rundown of what you can expect at the Cork every Thursday in June. That's On the Menu Live, the most delicious hour on radio, Saturday at 4 p.m. on Power Talk 1210.
Okay, we're back with Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk 1210 with our One Greater Than Solomon segment. And in Leviticus 19:34, it says, "The stranger who dwells among you shall be to you as one born among you, and you shall love him as yourself, for you were strangers in the land of Egypt." Well, this particular story came out just this past week. I don't know if everybody remembers this, but the name of the young lady is Rivka Berry. She from Ohio, and she made national headlines in 2009 when she ran away from her Muslim family after secretly converting to Christianity. Well, she's come out with a book called Heading in the Light, and it's her inspiring story that reveals that she had a lot of problems as a child. She'd been molested by a member of her family, also lost sight in her right eye, and those two incidents ultimately prompted her parents to leave Sri Lanka, which is where she was born, and move to the U.S. in the year 2000. She said she grew up in a Muslim home, came from a extremely strict home. In my culture, there's a lot of oppression. Shame is cast on the victim instead of on the person that's actually causing the problem. So after moving to Ohio, she gave herself completely to her Muslim faith, but found it to be empty. In her autobiography, she reveals she was then drawn to Christianity because it offered her a chance to worship God in a more personal way, not by compulsion, and in a language she could understand. She said, "When I was 13, I sought another way and did the really, in their culture, despicable thing, which was pray to another God." She says, "I was desperate just to be able to be free to worship Jesus, so I would sneak out sometimes to go to prayer meetings, or I would stay up late and read the Bible in the bathroom or find any possible way." Before long, her family found out about her conversion to Christianity, and she said she feared she would be killed as Sharia law commands. She says, "I feared for my life, recalling how one time her father threatened to kill her. I believe I would have been harmed, if not something more I can't say." So in 2009, she got on a bus and went from Ohio down to Florida to be with a family that was protecting her. And like I said, some people may remember that there was a big search for her, and ultimately she was returned back home, but she moved back and forth from foster homes, never really going back to her real family because of the problems that she had. And in the interview,